We're all virtually limitless.
This podcast is to provide a space for people to grow,
to rise,
and build.
This is for the people that are ready to step up and make moves,
no matter where they came from.
Welcome to the podcast.
Virtually limitless. This life we live, we get to choose. We can make excuses or make moves.
It's up to you.
Yeah, your network is your network.
So find your tribe or build it.
There's some change about to happen. I can feel it. Oh, this life we were given it. So take advantage, start living
it. I'm on a mission, new beginnings to start living.
Yeah, virtually limitless.
You are tuning in to another episode of.
This is another episode of Virtually Limitless.
What's up, Virtually Limitless entrepreneurs? It's your man here, Trey Carmichael, coming at you with another episode of the Virtually Limitless podcast. And today I'm coming at you with another one, with a special one. I'm here with my man, Dan Caldwell. And this guy helped build the iconic brand Tap Out. And everybody's heard of that. Most of us have at least a hat laying around somewhere. So Dan, tell us a little bit more about who you are, what you do, and why you do it for the people who don't know you.
Now it's just an addiction, I think. But, you know, in the beginning, it just became something fun to do. I think, you know, I was a former police officer who I'll tell you this about cops. Every cop has some idea in their hat that they're always trying to implement. I can't even count how many times other officers have come to me and said, oh, I have an idea for this. I remember this one officer coming to me with this great idea for how to write reports. It was just a way to keep your stencil so you could keep straight writing. And I was like, that's a great idea. You know, maybe we should put that out. And it just this kind of entrepreneurial bug that I had as a kid kind of came back up to me. And just out of a coincidence, me and my partner were training in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. Right after we saw the first UFC, we started training in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And being in there, both of us realized how, like, we were in the ground floor of something that was just going to be incredible. And you know that moment when, and you know this because you're a young entrepreneur who's building something right now that I think would probably be incredible and is incredible now. But you're in the ground floor of something that is just really in its infancy. And even though it's been around for a while, it's right now it's exploding. And that's how we felt. We just felt like we're here right now and we may never see this again. You know, it's a brand new sport, the first sport to emerge in over 100 years, at this level. And right now it's totally illegal in every state in the country, except for one. And so if we can somehow attach ourselves to this, I think, you know, it could be big. Maybe we can make $1 million. And so we just started. We just said, let's print some shirts and start selling them at these events. Because we used to compete at these small jiu-jitsu tournaments that they would have at schools and different arenas. So sometimes it would be a mixed martial arts fight, which would be kind of like the UFC, but it was small and underground and totally illegal. I can remember walking into this one that was at a U-Haul place, and you would go into the U-Haul place, you would give them a code word, they would offer to sell you a ticket, and then you would walk into the back, and in the back inside this big warehouse was a cage set up and two like small bleacher setups, and you would watch a fight. You know, you'd watch these fights. And that's how it started. And we were right there in the middle of it. So we just kept putting one foot in front of the other and ended up starting selling. We'd sell t-shirts at events like that and created our website. I would say we were one of the early e-commerce adopters when we started selling online in 1998, and we weren't in any store. So the only way you could get our shirts was either online, which we had a very archaic, website that would, when you purchased, it actually did all the whole transaction through email, and it would send us an email with all their credit card info. And then you can understand this, you know, I mean, a time when they would send the email to us with all their credit card information, and then we would have to manually type it into a little credit card machine, and that's how we would process an order. And then I would have to enter it into QuickBooks, and send them a QuickBooks receipt. I mean, that's how archaic it was.
Wow. But,
and then we just built it into something special.
That's insane, man. So I do want to, you did kind of pique something in my mind. Like you said that most police officers have an idea under their hat. What do you think keeps most of these police officers from implementing those ideas?
You know, lots of police officers, when they're at that point in their life, they found what they think is a career, because most police officers are lifers. I mean, almost all police officers are lifers. So I think they find a career and it's hard to pivot at that point. You feel like I'm in my career, maybe it's a side hustle, but they just don't know at that point whether they want to, because I love police work. I love police work today. I mean, you know, I built a company now that's kind of in that space a little bit. And it's because I love police work so much. I loved being able to be out there. It's almost like being an entrepreneur in a way where you kind of have some freedom. You're out there driving around in your car. You decide whether you want to make a traffic stop. If you get a call, you do have to go to the call. But when you get there, it's kind of, you're out in the open, fresh air. You know, it's kind of like you just have, it's just different than a regular job. And there's a lot of satisfaction out of there. There's a lot of excitement. It's like riding a roller coaster almost all day. It's just a really fun job that I enjoyed, and I would probably go back and do it again if my life permitted it. But I love being an entrepreneur too. It's a roller coaster ride too. And so I just think these guys, they have things that they love their police work, and they need money like everybody else, and they would love to have what, you know, some entrepreneurs have, these entrepreneurs that are doing well. But that transition, that pivot from having this secure career to becoming that entrepreneur that risks everything and put it on the line, I'm not sure a lot of them are willing to take that step.
So what was that mindset shift like for you then, man, from being the police officer to jumping into starting this t-shirt business out of the back of a car?
Well, luckily enough, we could do both at that time. So we were still police officers. Me and my partner were both cops. He was a deputy sheriff. I was a police officer. And we could go to these events on our off time. We would just schedule it like, hey, we know there's a fight. We had pretty good notice, 30 days out, and it was going to be on this day at this time. So let's get those times off. And we would show up at the event and with our table and our clothes and our banners, and we would just hang those things up. And we just really thought at that time that we were going to just be selling to our friends and kind of make a little bit of, you know, every time you build something, I'm sure you get this too. When you first start, the little wins are really what keep you going. So when we would have, you know, do have a great night with our banners all over the place, and it seems like, you know, you're on the center of the earth at that moment when these fights are going on and people are recording it, you know, it's going to be a video that's put out into commerce. They're going to sell these videos, and they're catching our Tap Out logos in the background and our big banners that we have. And maybe we have a couple fighters that we gave free shorts to wear into the fight. So we usually didn't pay them. Maybe we'd throw them $100 or something, but most of the time they would just give them shorts and a shirt and they would wear it into the fight. So it was just a little tiny event, you know, maybe a couple hundred people there. But at that moment, it feels like a big win. So it just always carry us to the next one. And then we started to have people who, because we'd pass out a lot of information, flyers and cards and stickers and stuff. So they would come back, and at home, we would start to get orders. So it kind of, we saw this progress of the company growing because we were we called it throwing hand grenades. And even I have a hand grenade tattooed on my right hand. That was the whole thought and process of that, is that we would throw hand grenades all over the country and eventually it would grow the company. And so as we started to see this grow, when we started to hit 100,000 and 300,000 and almost 1 million, I was flying. I would fly. My month would basically be, you know, one weekend I would fly to Hawaii for a big fight out there called Super Brawl. Then I'd fly to Indiana for a fight out there called Hook and Shoot. And then we would all jump in my Suburban and go drive up to Arizona and go sell at the Rage in the Cage out there. You know, so it was just building slow wins that just kept building on top of each other. And eventually the company, you know, turned into this $100 million behemoth.
Awesome, man. So I love that you call that throwing hand grenades, actually, because I'm really a big fan of the guerrilla marketing and just market infiltration and whatever you can do just to really get in front of your audience. So was there, other than just showing up at these events, was there anything else that you feel like played a big part in you being able to turn that brand into the industry titan that it was?
Oh, I mean, it was everything. The guerrilla marketing, I lived on these guerrilla marketing books that, you know, there was a whole series of them out at the time that were really big. And we had both read all of them. And my other partner too, Scrape, we had read all of them. And it was just always about how could we do the most with what we had, and which was not a lot of money. Because at that, by this time, a few years in, well, my partner had quit a couple of years in. So he quit the police department. He had some problems. He had a use of force thing and he kind of just walked away. He was just tired of them chasing him or them, you know, coming after him about one thing or the other. So he quit and we had this conversation. Should I quit too? And he's like, no, you got to pay for this stuff. So I stayed on for another few years. I think I quit in 2003, and so we started the company in 97. So, I think that, we started coming up with ideas. You know, we don't have a lot of money. How can we market ourselves? And that meant, you know, passing out a lot of stickers at the time. We ended up, we made ourselves into these characters because one of the shows we went to, we had passed out all these flyers and all of them, I can remember all of them being on the ground. And Charles came to me, my partner, and he said, you know what, this is never going to happen again. We want to make these flyers so sick that no one's ever going to want to throw them on the ground. And then he called me one day, and I remember it was at this club called Sharkies or Sharks or something like that in Huntington Beach. And he goes, you got to come out here. And so I went out there that night, and my partner Scrape, he's our third partner. He had this big wig on. And he's 6'7" already. So he's got this big, crazy Afro wig on. And it looked like his real hair. It looked real. And every girl in the place was talking to him, all these people. He was like I remember Charles pulling me back and goes, look how much attention he's getting. That's the type of attention that we need when we go into these shows. He goes, so you're going to come up with a character. I'm going to have a character and he's going to have a character. And that's his character right there. And he's just going to be crazy flamboyant. You're going to be this tough dude, you know, kind of like you, kind of the look you already have. And he goes, remember that bandana you had that one time where you wore it real low on your eyes and looked crazy like a vato, you know, gangbanger. And I was like, yeah, you know, cause I had a motorcycle, so I'd wear it when I was riding. And he said, that's what you're going to wear every time. So we came up with these characters. And we didn't even realize what we were doing at the time, but people started to either love us or hate us. They're like, why are these guys all dressed up like crazy looking dudes? But they never forgot us. Every event we walked into, it was like, oh, those are the tap out guys. And we started to become the tap out crew is what they started to call us. This tap out crew, there's the tap out crew. And we started to see that online. And, you know, some people call us goofballs and some people call us, oh, those are the tap out guys, because we are so cool with everybody. And we're still, you know, my boy Charles he's 6'2", 220. He's a, you know, football player. The Scrape was 6'7". I'm not that tall. I'm only like 5'7", but I'm all tattooed up and I had this headband on. And so we looked like this force when we walked in the door. And eventually that got us, you know, we became hidden characters in the UFC video game. We had our own television show on television for a few years. You can still buy that series today like at Amazon or Walmart.com, eBay. We had our own Topps cards. I mean, you're not going to, when you start to gather attention like that, you just don't realize what it does for your brand, but it really helped us take off, and it changed the landscape of the company for us.
100%, man. And I actually interviewed Colton Crottinger a while back, and one of the big things that he said to me was that he focuses on eyeballs. How can you get people talking about you? How can you get people telling their friends about you? What can you do to make yourself just stick in their mind when those eyeballs do get on you? So that's really what I've always, what I've focused on ever since that interview, is just how many eyeballs can we get, and then how can we make it stick? So I really love that you're kind of, that's really what you're basically all you're doing. You're showing up at the places that they are, you're infiltrating the audience, and then you're taking on these kind of alter egos so that people see you and you stick.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many people out there, you know, this, that there's you, when you walk into a room, there's 500 other people that do what you do. Right. And you know, this trait, or you walk into a place like Clubhouse, there's, you know, 500 people online at that time, at that moment, that do exactly what you do. You just do things different. So how do you stand out in that crowd? For us, it was the same thing. There's other clothing companies out there. There's other people walking around this event. How do we stand out in a way that people won't forget us? And we started to create these videos that we would give away. This is, you know, 1998, 99, 2000. We created these two videos, one at first, our first one, then we created a second one. But it was like, it was these videos where we were just doing crazy stuff. And we would ask, we asked all these event promoters for a free fight. Like, what's one of your best fights? So let's put it on here. We'll market your, we're going to market you guys in this video that we're going to give away free to our audience. We're not going to sell it. We're going to say it's a free $100 value, but we're not going to sell it. We're just going to give it away to our audience. And so they each would give us a fight. All these big events, not the UFC, but all these other big events, gave us a free fight to put on our VHS tape or our CD or DVD. And we would give it away with any purchase over $100, and they would get this free video. And that was like, it, and really what it did was, it was just a video that marketed us, and it marketed these other fights, which helped them. And, you know, it was because these fight promoters became reciprocal. They would give us free event time, let us sell our clothes there for free sometimes, or charge us, you know, a lower cost. But, you know, it was just always about how can we get our in front of people and do things that other people aren't doing? You know, how do we flip that, this whole thing on its head, and just do it totally different than everybody else? And that's, I think if you look at our marketing plan, you know, someday we'll put it out there, but you know, I'm just giving little pieces out there, but it was everything. That was everything to us. And that's all we thought about.
So I do want to point out real quick, whenever you are a starting entrepreneur, those are really the two most important things that you can focus on, is the market infiltration and the collaborations. So after pointing that out, my next question becomes, man, you had to get really good at networking, I imagine, to make all of those things happen, to get those collaborations. So how did you go about, did you have a strategic means of making connections to make those opportunities happen?
That's so funny you asked that, because, I mean, 1,000%. Our conversations were, everybody had in our group had read this little book that somebody turned us on to, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And that just became our, well, I mean, I don't want to compare it to the Bible, because it's, I mean, I believe the Bible is the greatest book of all time, but this book became our focus, and we lived by it. And we would discuss our strategies when we would go talk to these people, because we looked so crazy and we didn't go anywhere. Nobody ever, it was kind of like comparable. I think the idea came from kind of Kiss, a little bit like Kiss. So everywhere we went, nobody saw us without our look. We didn't undress in front of people. Nobody, if we went out anywhere where people noticed us, where we were going together, we had our look on. And you can see, if you, anybody Googles us, you can see how crazy and weird we look most of the time. But it was crazy like a fox, right? So we would go to these places and people would underestimate us because we looked, you know, kind of stupid. And people would think, oh, these guys don't know what they're doing. But we were ex-police officers. We were educated. We understood what the craziness we were, you know, putting out there in front of people. And when we'd walk into a room, we'd have a great business meeting with a couple billionaires, like Lorenzo Fertitta and Frank Fertitta, the guys that bought the UFC. Our first meeting with them was on September 11th, 2001. And as these buildings were crashing down in New York, and it was a very sad day, we were having this incredible meeting in Las Vegas with these guys. And it was just, I mean, it was a somber moment, but it was still, we were very focused about what we wanted to get in that meeting. And that was, we wanted to get on the ring, in the ring of the UFC, which absolutely changed the landscape of our company. When we went in there, we said, look, I don't care what we have to do. We don't have our money. We don't have money. So get this. We didn't have money. We didn't have a lot of money. We were making some money, but we, every penny went back into the company because we were growing 300% a year. So what I would do, what we did, ended up negotiating with them was that we would trade them clothes for the opportunity to have our logo in the ring. And so for 4 years or 5 years, they gave us the logo in the ring for the for just trading clothes. We would trade clothes for that opportunity. And so it, we really won because we would give them clothes that they would sell at the event, and in turn they would make their money. But it was only, I mean, we were paying them maybe $3,000 to $5,000. It was like a, it grew a little bit. We started at three and maybe it turned out to be like 8,000 at the most. And eventually we started paying them cash and big money when we started making money. Eventually we, in 2006, we started paying them big money, but that's because we could at that time. But at the beginning, we'd pay $3,000 and we'd do that in clothing. So we, how do you do that? Because you have a great relationship with people. And because they believed in us and they were championing us and they wanted us to win. And those are just, you know, being real with people. And I, you know, it's like the only way I can explain it is those principles that are in How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. It was very, very, we were very focused on how we were going to get that done and very genuine in the same way. We weren't trying to be sneaky or anything. It wasn't, we weren't trying to, you know, trick anybody. It was about, we were going in there to have real relationships and we wanted them to be a part of it. And they, those guys specifically, but the fighters too, we had that, we were great friends with all these fighters. You did, I mean, it, this happened across the board. Guys like Chuck Liddell, I would send him a check for $2,000 to wear our clothing in the UFC. And he wouldn't cash the checks. He never cashed a check that we sent him, and we could only afford $2,000. But who does? It was still $2,000. He wasn't making a ton of money either in the UFC. You know, he was still an early guy in the whole fighting game, and he helped build the sport. He wasn't making a lot of money when he would fight, but he wouldn't even cash our checks. That's how close we were with these guys. So to me, those relationships are everything.
Man, I really hope that people are taking notes right now, because honestly, you've covered all of the foundational things that any entrepreneur, any business owner needs to be thinking about and needs to be focusing on if they're going to build a business that can last through times like 2020 and who knows how long. I mean, we might still be in 2020 part two. We don't really know yet. Like it might not be over yet, but like, focusing on the market infiltration, being in front of the places where your audience is, building the collaborations, and then nurturing those relationships is really how you build a business that can stand the test of anything. So I just hope people are taking notes right now, man.
I hope so too. I mean, it's like we learned these things as we went, but I definitely, we have to credit reading for a lot of our learning, because we didn't understand this space. We'd understood people, because being a police officer, you have to understand people. And I think that's what gave us an edge, is being an ex-police officers. We understood people and how to deal with people and how to not only encourage people, but now, I don't want to say get people to do what you want them to do. Like, that's not what I want to say, but as a police officer, you don't want to have to fight every guy that you come in contact with. And a lot of guys are aggressive and they have, you know, they have attitudes and they have machismo, or as we call it. So how do you get them to do what you need them to do without, throwing them on the ground and making them do it? So you have to speak to people in a way that makes them respect you, but also show that you respect them and come together to make that decision. And we just kind of applied it in our own way, along with the Dale Carnegie principles, and it really changed our business.
Absolutely, man. I love that. And if you haven't read How to Win Friends and Influence and you're listening to this right now, either go find the audiobook on YouTube or go order you a copy on Amazon, because it will legitimately change the way that you communicate with people, engage with people, and just how you build relationships as a business owner.
I read it every year, every single year. So it's that those principles are that important that I don't think in the years, I can't think of one year, maybe I missed one year where I didn't read it, but I think in the last 20 years, I probably read it every year.
That's insane. I'm not a big reader, but I've just started doing the audiobooks a lot more myself.
I'm 100% audiobooks now. So that's all I listen to. That's all I do now.
Awesome, man. So I was actually pretty excited to see when I was looking into you that you did, you were giving career advice to some foster kids a while back. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I just love the potential of people. And this group, I think you're speaking about, I'm pretty sure, although I have spoken at boys clubs in different places. That just happened to catch that it was a reporter there. So it caught a lot of attention, and I love those opportunities. Probably 99% of the time when I'm speaking to different groups, it's not caught like that. So I have spoken to a lot of kids groups, but I just love the opportunity of kids. And these kids really have it hard because they were kids that were never, they maybe went into a home here and there, but they're aging out. So in other words, they were in the system their whole life or part of their life. And now they're turning 18 and they're basically being put out to the world and said, hey, I know you have no family. And I don't know about you, but you know, family has supported me in ways that I can't even explain. My parents are still married. They have a great relationship. They've always been my rock. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. We grew up in a really poor neighborhood where me and my dad and brother have been in a shootout in front of our house. My mom's been tackled and mugged in our doorstep. We had, it was just a crazy, it was a really bad neighborhood, but we had a great family and that was always my rock. So I think these kids not having that really is near and dear to my heart. And I just love to be able to help people and hopefully, you know, help them reach their potential, because I just wanted to show that if I can do it, coming from the neighborhood that I came from, that even though I feel like they're further behind that rock than I am because they don't have anybody to lean on to, but I wanted to show them there's mentors out there and people now that more than ever that you can get to, that will respond to you, that you can talk to, when I was in high school and I really wanted to be an entrepreneur in high school, I was a DJ all through high school. I started at 14. So I put myself through high school as a DJ. I remember ditching school to go speak to this guy who owned like 5 Subways. And I would go sit down and buy a Subway sandwich and a drink and ask him if he had a second worker that would work, and it got a little slow at a certain time. And that's when I would go. And he sat down and just would give me advice. I probably spoke to him probably only a handful of times, but I remember listening to all of his advice and just thinking like, I can't believe in my area, there were no other mentors. There were nobody else that I could look at and speak to like that. So I wanted to be that person for people. And I just hope that, guys like that are given a chance because of mentors, people that they can speak to. I just want to be that person for them.
Love that, man. So we're actually in the process of getting everything ready to start a program called Limitless Kids, where we're going to be offering group coaching as well as like software, a software toolkit and stuff like that to kids. What kind of advice would you give someone maybe in my situation where we're wanting to start speaking to kids, working with kids to so that maybe we can relate to them more, speak to them better and get the point across to them? Because I know it's going to be different than teaching adults. It's got to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways it's not that different in the way that people want. There's a hero's journey. Everybody has a hero's journey in their life, every successful person anyway. And when kids hear that story, they find themselves in that story. They hear it and they like, that could be me. That's all I ever wanted in life. Most of the books that I read early on were, even though I did read like How to Win Friends, Influence People, Think and Grow Rich and the Guerrilla Marketing books, most of the books that I actually read were actually biographies or autobiographies on great people. And I just wanted to see that it was possible. You know, I looked up to guys like Damon John, who had, you know, created FUBU clothing and how, you know, how did he do that? You know, how was he able to make this happen? If you'll see, there's as much as we don't look like the same clothing, there's some parallels there. He was kind of the character in his own brand. He was his own model. They modeled, he had five guys for us, by us. If he was on all of his hang tags, we put ourselves on all of our hang tags. I mean, it's like you just find that in other people. So I think when people, if you can reach them through story and through that hero's journey, that affects everybody. And that's all I wanted to see, that it was just possible. And if you can just show these kids that things like this are possible, like that I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I woke up and I had to like figure everything out. And I did that through reading and through learning and through mentors, that you guys can do the exact same thing that I did. There's a path there. And it's hard to see sometimes, but there's a path there. And if you find it, it will take you to the same place. Shoot, I get emotional. I'm getting emotional saying it. And so I know that that's how you connect with these guys. That's how you connect with these kids. And it's incredible when you make that connection.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that with me. And like, that's valuable for me. And I know that there's a lot of people in my audience that want to work with kids moving forward. So I wanted to make sure that we touched on that. So we've only got a few more minutes left. So I do want to ask you, what are you focused on these days, man?
Well, in 2010, in 2009, my partner got killed in by a drunk driver in a car accident. And he was kind of my, you know, I mean, we bounced everything off of each other and everything that we did was always, you know, it was just, we were excited about the business all the time. It was the night before the day before he was killed, we had did a photo shoot together. And he came over to my house afterwards and we had this great conversation and when he passed away that night, things were just never the same again. And in the company. And so even though I sold the company in 2010, I stayed on for another 5 years as president. When I left in 2015, I had met my wife. And so we were kind of creating a new life and she became that person for me. So I just wanted to do everything with her. And we created this business called Billionaire Collectibles. And it just out of more of a boutique business, but it's something so incredible that we just, for anybody who's an entrepreneur, and I think I've spoke about this a little bit, but yeah, I was driven by other entrepreneurs and their stories and people and other leaders like Lincoln and Thomas Edison, these other leaders of the past who've done incredible things. And so we had the opportunity and I had owned a few pieces and she had owned a few things. And so it was these pieces that like made us feel, I mean, imagine holding a letter from Thomas Edison where he's talking about his light bulb and just going back to that moment in 1888 from when this letter was written and he's speaking about this, it just brings us so close to these people. And, you know, a letter like this might go for $20,000. What we do is we frame these letters and we put their famous quote below it with a photo of them. And we, in a real modern way, not this old brown frame. You know, it's a really nice modern frame and modern look. And we frame these pieces and we sell them to, we call it art for the CEO, but we sell them to other entrepreneurs. And we have a bunch of really incredible entrepreneurs and athletes too that buy from us. And we have Washington pieces, Martin Luther King letters, and photos and signed books too. Think and Grow Rich, signed by Napoleon Hill, you know, these great books and great photos and great letters signed by these incredible people. And it's one of our, it's our favorite thing to do is to go travel around the world and find pieces like this, like modern day Indiana Joneses. And we also have a podcast together, the Printing Punk Podcast. Our other passion, of course, is, you know, our kids. We have two kids together. And I have three kids previous also, but so I have five kids total, but we love our kids and we're trying to grow them into future leaders. And we want other entrepreneurs to help, you know, learn to navigate that. You can have an incredible family, an incredible business and incredible kids. You can hear my kids in the background and incredible kids. And we just want to show people that that's possible. So our podcast, the Pretty and Punk Podcast, that's what that whole thing is about. That's what that show's about.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you. I just want to thank you so much for your time today. Like, you literally, you covered the foundational things that every entrepreneur needs to be focused on. And on top of that, I feel like you showed us that overall, you're just an incredible dude.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, but I hope my passion came through. And because you have to be passionate about what you're doing. If you're living life right now and you're not passionate about what you're doing, it's time to pivot. It's time to find something new in your life. I feel so sorry for people that go through their whole life, you know, doing something that they hate or doing something that they're not excited about. We're excited every day when we get up. And I've always been that with everything that I've done, whether it being a police officer, when I was a DJ at 14 years old, when we started Tap Out, building Tap Out, everything has always excited me getting up in the morning. I've told myself that I'm going to live my life like that. And I hope everybody else can, you know, if they're not doing that now, they need to relook at their life and decide what they need to change.
Absolutely, man. Love your life or change it.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, brother.
Now, thanks, Trey, for having me on.
If you learned anything from this show, make sure you leave a review and check out the description to join our community and grab some free resources. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Virtually Limitless.